So yesterday we had a chance to really begin to open up the Mishnah, really begin to read the Mishnah, the opening Mishnah of our parak, with careful eyes. So appreciate the yesodos the Mishnah is laying out, and the beautiful elegance of how the Mishnah is pointing us in within this takana d'rabbanan of Birkas Hananin. The Mishnah is introducing us up front, both to the aspect of Nusach and to the aspect of Pirut. There are specific categories, and the brachas have to speak to specific categories. And we began to see, and Mirtzachem will see more as we work our way through the parak, that there's a Ke'en Doraisa aspect to the way Chazal designed the Pirut brachas, the way the Chazal crafted the categories for brachas, that's Drabanan, but rooted in Doraisa categories. And the Nusach of brachas also is Nusach Midrabanan, but rooted in Doraisa Tanakh phrases. Baruch Atah Hashem, by the way, is also a Tanakh phrase, as in Baruch Atah Hashem Lamdeinu Chukecha, and many other similar phraseologies in Tehillim and elsewhere. And Hamotzi Lechem in Aretz, as the Ritzel points out, is a Tanakh phrase. Rifa'enu Hashem v'nei Rafei is a Tanakh phrase. And not only phrases from Tanakh, but as we saw yesterday, based on the Gra, and the way the Gra points back to our, the Gra in Hilchas Chala, Siman Shin Chav Ches Niyaradeh, points back to our Mishnah, that not only phrases from Tanakh, but the language. The brachas are in Biblical Hebrew, ideally, rather than in Mishnaic Hebrew, and that's why that would explain why the Shulchan Aruch prefers, as does the She'iltos, to say Lahafresh Truma rather than Lahafresh Chala, because the biblical phrasing is Truma. Just one added footnote to that before we move on to one other topic in our mission, the topic of Yayin. One other footnote to that is a point that the Netziv makes in his Sefer on the She'iltos. Just to stop for a moment before we read the Netziv, just to appreciate, there's a very famous story you may have heard as a child, and now you're actually looking at what the story is about, literally. The Netziv, who wrote this running, this, as you see, this lengthy running commentary, Hamek She'ela, on this, what used to be a very obscure Sefer, the She'iltos, from Vachai Gon. Netziv was the second Rosh Yeshiva of the Volozhny Yeshiva. Volozhny Yeshiva existed basically over the course of the 1800s. It was founded by Rabbi Chaim Volozhin, prime Talmud Muvak of the Gra. Excuse me? Volozhin was a town in Lithuania. And under the direction and guidance and vision of his Rebbe, the Gra, the Chaim Volozhin founded, was really in a certain sense the first modern yeshiva, the first yeshiva of modern time. And yeshivas broadly, particularly Ashkenazi, Lithuanian yeshivas, are largely founded on the Volozhin model. YU is a very, very much a direct hemshech. YU was formed from a conglomeration of two yeshivas in the Lower East Side, one of which was named Eitz Chaim, which I believe was the name of the Volozhin yeshiva. They founded the small yeshiva here in the Lower East Side, New York City, Eitz Chaim, meant to be a hemshech on these shores of Eitz Chaim and Volozhin. So the Volozhin yeshiva lasted over the course of the 1800s. Roughly the first half of that century, it was led by Reb Chaim Volozhin. The second half of that century, it was led by the Netziv, and at times the Netziv and other co-Rashi yeshiva, the Beis Halevi, Reb Chaim, Brisker, and so forth. Netziv was a phenomenal Talmud Chacham, a phenomenal Masmid. And you have in front of you the Sefer, the vast, profound Sefer that he wrote on what, until his time, was an almost unknown work of the Gaonim, the She'iltos. She'iltos was really very, very obscure, and it's to the extent that it's better known now, it's better known because the Netziv made it famous by writing an entire Sefer with incredible Bekiyas and incredible Amkus and all the Shiltos. And the Netziv apparently told the following story about himself. That he was a bit of a wild kid as a child. And his parents were from Eden, and they sent him to Cheder. Well, 6, 7, 8 years old. And apparently the Malamed in Cheder reached out to his parents and was periodically letting them know, like, young Naftali Tzvi Yehuda is really not behaving. He's very disruptive. He's not paying attention. He's not learning. He's getting the way of other kids learning. Like, it's not working out. And it seems like the Malamed periodically let them know, like, you know, it's going from bad to worse. And at one point, he told them, look, I don't think it's a good fit. He's not learning. He's not gaining anything by being the Cheder. He's detracting from the learning of other kids. Like, it's time to, you know, he's not cut out for this, which is fine. So it's time to find him a profession and let him apprentice to someone. In early 1800s in Europe, most kids anyways didn't stay in yeshiva much past bar mitzvah. Economically, it wasn't really viable. So you learned until bar mitzvah. A little after, sometimes people could afford a little more or someone to sponsor, but it was pretty typical. Shortly after bar mitzvah, he went to work. He was younger. He was before bar mitzvah, but the Rebbe said, look, it's not working. And that's what would have happened, except, as they tell the story, for the fact that his parents were talking about this at the table, thinking that young Naftali Tzvi Yehuda is already sleeping. But in fact, he was a mischievous kid. He wasn't just mischievous in cheder. He also was secretly awake under the covers. His parents thought he was sleeping, and they thought that they could speak to each other comfortably. And they were bemoaning the fact that, you know, they had hoped that he would succeed in learning and at least, you know, to make it till bar mitzvah and cheder. But whatever, okay, I guess the Rebbe said it's not working. We'll apprentice him to the local shoemaker. So apparently, young Naftali Tzvi Yehuda overheard this conversation. And the way the story is told, comes bursting into the room. I don't know how many rooms were in the house, maybe two. Or maybe just a curtain, whatever it was. Comes bursting and says, no, you got to give me another chance. I'm really going to make it work. And they gave him another chance. And he did. And not only did he manage to redirect his energy and succeed in cheder and, you know, graduate, so to speak, cheder, you know, he made it all the way through till bar mitzvah, but he kept learning and he dug deep and he became not only a cheder graduate, not only a Talmud Chacham, he became one of the greatest Talmud Chachamim of modern times, and one who shaped, as I mentioned before, and the Volozhin shifted dramatically under his reign, under his leadership. It was one flavor during leadership of the Chaim Volozhin, and it shifted in many ways under the Netziv, and really became a model for so many other yeshivas. In a certain sense, the Netziv, I think it's quite accurate to say that he impacted the learning at least of tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of other Jews, without exaggeration. And that itself is, wow. And the Netziv apparently would sometimes tell Talmidim, imagine if I wouldn't have overheard that conversation. I would have come to Shemayim. I'm a nice guy, a nice Orthodox Jew, a shoemaker. I go to shul, I try to listen to the rabbis, the Shir and Mishnayis a little bit, and Yaakov, whatever. Yeah, a good Jew. Send my kids to Cheder. I would come to Shemayim. And they would say, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda, where's your sefer on the Shiltos? It was said, my sefer? And what's the Shiltos? I barely know what Gemara is. Imagine what could have been. So that's apparently the city used to tell the story. We often don't realize how much potential we have. Again, that would have been his reality. He would have left Cheder at the age of whatever it was, 8 or 10. A nice kid, a good kid, doing good things, honest shoemaker, trying to raise a good family, trying to learn some Mishnayos here and there, trying to, you know, pay some attention in davening. There would have been an unbelievable amount of untapped potential. How do I know there would have been an unbelievable amount of untapped potential? Because I know what he actually did accomplish when he tapped into it. It's a It's extraordinary. And that's this sefer that you have right in front of you. Who ever heard of the Shiltos? The Netziv made the Shiltos famous with his sefer on the Shiltos. That's this sefer. That's exactly what he said. I'd have come to Shammai there and said, where's your Hamlik She'ela? I would have said, what on earth are you talking about? And it's a reminder. Not to push ourselves, Chas v'Shalom, in unhealthy ways, but at the same time, not to sell ourselves short. And to recognize that it's usually the case that I can accomplish in healthy, balanced, sustainable ways, that I can accomplish more than I think I'm capable of. And with that, now let's take a look at the Shiltas. The Shiltas here, and the Shiltas we saw yesterday, he's the one who says Al HaTruma, unlike the Rambam who says L'Hafresh Chala.
So we're reading the Netziv or the Shiltos?
Yes, we are taking a look at the Netziv in his commentary on the Shiltos. Here in page Lamed Tes, so he begins to talk about he says at the very beginning of Sivkat and Beis, when the Shilta says Hatruma, he says, well, the Bahag, another halachic work of the Gaonim, the Halachas Gedolos, in the Halachas Gedolos, Nilchas Chala, Isa Chala, says Lahafresh Chala. V'chein Kazar Rambam, as we said, the Rambam says Chala. V'shulchan Aruch, Shinayin, V'shulchan Aruch, Hevi, Shetayin, Ischaos. He brings both versions. As we saw yesterday, the Gron is Beyer, Hiskim Levarech Lahafresh Truma Kilishna Dekra. The Gra supports the approach of the Shulchan Aruch Lahafresh Truma, and the Netziv is pointing out the most ancient source for the approach to the Shulchan Aruch. But he also quotes a Rishon who said it. The most ancient source that we have is this Shiltos, and that's what the Gra ultimately supports the position of the Shiltos as the Shulchan Aruch does. And he says, the Gra goes on to say, the reason, the rationale is Kalishna Dekra, V'lo Chala, Kalashin HaMishnah. We don't want to use Mishnah Hebrew. The word Chala, the term for the piece of dough that you take off from the rest of the dough, in Mishnah Hebrew, that little ball of dough is called the Chala. But in Biblical Hebrew, that little ball of dough is called the Truma. Chala means the loaf. The whole loaf is called, or the whole ball of dough, or the whole loaf is called chala. I'm sorry? The Shiltos that you have right in front of you.
And it supports Mafresh Truma because...
He says, Al HaTruma. You use the word Truma in the Bracha, and the rationale, as the Gra, as the Netziv here is quoting from the Gra, when we discussed yesterday, it's because ideally we want to use biblical language in Brachas. As we saw, as you and I saw, that the Ritva makes that comment on our sugya, on our Mishnah, the Ritva makes that comment. He makes a comment in terms of one aspect of the Mishnah, why are we saying Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz instead of Borei Lechem or Min Ha'adama? He says, no, we're looking for a biblical language, biblical phrasing. The Gra says we're also looking for biblical language. We're looking for a biblical style of Hebrew. Hochiach L'zeh Midasnan Brachos. The Gra, interestingly, does not highlight Ilan and Eitz. He talks about Bori Mina Deshaim, Kiloshan HaMikra, V'lo Yirakos, Kiloshan Mikra, V'lo Yirakos, Kiloshan HaMishnah. Okay, then the Netziv goes on to discuss the Gra. Can I bring a source? Can I bring a Raya? The Netziv at the bottom of the page says, I think I have a Raya, Yesh L'Habi Raya L'Das HaGra, because we say, Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz. The Netziv did not have a Ritva. If you look at this Ritva, I'll tell you on the front page. Hold on a moment. This Ritva was Yotzei La'ara Pi Kisva Yad Tefusim Rishonim. I do not know that the Ritva on Brachos was available to the Netziv. I don't know that it was in print at the time. It's now been reprinted by Masada Rav Kook, based on very old prints and based on manuscripts. So the Netziv looks like he was mechaven to the Ritva's idea in our Mishnah. He came to it, what the Ritva wrote in the 1300s, and the Netziv came to independently in the late 1800s. You see at the bottom of the first column, Yesh Lahav Yirai L'das HaGra, the Roy Lomer L'Hashan HaMikra, Mid Mevarachin HaMotzi Lechem Min Haaretz. And then let's pick up at the top of the second column. I'm sorry?
What about
Hamotzi? As we discussed yesterday, Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz is based on the language of the Chumash, and that's why it doesn't correspond to the other brachas in the Mishnah. V'adai ani omer. The Narnitziv makes one additional point that's worth thinking about. This is a point that I was very excited to... The Netziv makes the following additional point. It's been bothering me for a couple of years. There are many brachas that are not biblical language. Al Natilas Yadayim. Al Natilas Lulav. So the Netziv says like this at the top of the column. Adayin Eni Omer, the kol ze eino ele inin nusach she'ein bo lashem b'nei adam. There are limitations to this rule. We're going to use biblical language when there isn't a dominant way of saying it in colloquial language. There's no lashon beis avos bnei adam. Heichad the lashon bnei adam b'lashon hakodesh mishuna b'lashon hamikra. When the colloquial language is different from biblical Hebrew, then aktinan k'lashon bnei adam v'hu ikar gadol bebrachos betfila ubrachos. The alpi did never b'chaloshon. He says, look. The reason why there's some flexibility is because, as the Mishnah says at the beginning of the seventh parak of Sota, has a long list of cases where the halacha demands speech. Birkas Hamazon demands speech, Tefillah demands speech, Birkas Kohanim demands speech, Mikra Bikurim demands speech. It's in Sota because the procedure by a Sota includes spoken parts. And the Mishnah there, beginning of the seventh parak, categorizes all these mitzvahs of Amira into Elu Ne'emar and B'lashon HaKodesh ve'Elu Ne'emar and B'chaloshon. Which ones need to be said specifically in Hebrew and which ones can be said in translation? We saw in the beginning of the Bechias this year, the beginning of one of the first topics in the second paragraph of Brachos, is can you be Yotzei Kriyat Shema in translation or not? The question of how you read the Psukim. So that's what the Mishnah points out. There are mitzvahs of Amira that are Ne'emar and B'chaloshon that can be done in any language in translation, and there are others that have to be done specifically B'lashon HaKodesh. For instance, most of the mitzvahs of Amir that are familiar to us can be done in translation, like Kriyat Shema and Tefillah and Birkas Hamazon. The most, for us, popular example of a mitzvah of Amir which cannot be done in translation is Birkas Kohanim. Birkas Kohanim has to be done in Hebrew. If you have a Kohen who is not able to articulate Hebrew, so say, really sorry, we would love to have you bracha, but it wouldn't help for you to get up and say Birkas Kohanim in English or in Sanskrit or Portuguese. You're not Yotze unless it's in the original text. That Birkas Kohanim is not Ne'emar B'chaloshon. So the Netziv makes the point, well, since Brachos and Tefillah are Ne'emar and B'chaloshon, you can say them in English. That's the story they tell about the Brisker Rav. Brisker Rav Velvel, Chaim's Salvechik son, younger brother of Moshe, uncle of the Rav, so he, one of his Hakpadas was pronouncing the words of Kriyat Shema exactly correctly. They tell these stories, very, very extreme hakpada on how to pronounce it. Sometimes he sort of gets stuck on a word, he say it many times. The Rav tells his Talmidim that his uncle, Revelvel, Brisker Rav, came to stay with him at one point during World War I. And Moshe Soloveitchik noticed after Brisker Rav had left that his son, Yashaber, had started also to, like, when he would say Krishna, he would like say the same word five times until he got it to his mind exactly right. So Reb Chaim told him, "Machnish the Velvel shtick. Don't copy your uncle's shtick. That's extreme." Okay. So whatever it is, the Maisa, that's what the Brisker Rav did. He was known for saying the words again, again, again to the guy, right? So suppose that someone once overheard him trying to get the word Esev right. Esev b'savcha. Esev. He kept not being happy. He didn't get it right. And finally, after a few times, you said groz, which is Yiddish for Esev, grass. He was sure that he was pronouncing the Yiddish word right. He wasn't sure he was getting the tzeire and the ayin right, but groz he knew how to say. Because it's ne'emar b'chaloshon, because you can say in translation. So the Brisker Rav points out, sorry, the Netziv, who was loosely related, you can work out the family tree, how the Netziv was related to Brisker Rav. I think the Netziv was Brisker Rav's great-grandfather. I think the Netziv's granddaughter married Chaim Soloveitchik. So that his granddaughter was the Brisker Rav's mother. So the Netziv says, well, if you can say tfilos and brachos in translation, so then you can say it in English or Yiddish, groz, you could definitely translate it into Mishnaic Hebrew. definitely going to be Yotze if you say Elon. Elon is at the very least a translation of Eitz. So he says, if it's never B'chalosh, Mikolshkein Tov Lom B'Vloshen B'nei Adam, and that's why he goes on to say, I spoke about it earlier, U'mashem Hachi, in the narrow lines, Mevarchim Laniach Tfilin, L'Kiboa Mezuzah, Al Netilas Lulav. Those are not the biblical terms. Hanachas Tfilin, Kivias Mezuzah, even the word Tfilin is not a biblical word. Totefes, Os, Zikarov. The Chumash never calls it Tfilin. And again, the word mezuzah, a biblical Hebrew word, but in the biblical Hebrew, mezuzah means the doorpost, not the scroll that you attach to the doorpost. Or al natilas lulav. Ein ze lashon hakodesh be'emes. But v'lashon b'nei adam hachi mashmaos lashon hakodesh. See, that's the Netziv's idea. How do you fit that with everything else? So then everything should be lashon b'nei adam. We do say eitz and not ilan. So it could be two things. Number one, I was thinking, and I was glad as Mechav and Avichai made this point as well, that the examples in the Tziv gives are all examples of Birkas HaMitzvahs. So it could be that Birkas HaMitzvahs is more of an impulse, more of a tilt towards Lashon B'nei Adam, maybe. That might explain why the Rambam and the Bahag and the Ramah say Hafrash Eschala. Maybe in the world of mitzvahs, Birkas HaMitzvahs, we're more inclined to Lashon B'nei Adam, perhaps. Avichai pointed out that you have to think of it, maybe that works with the different approaches to how to think about the role of Birkas HaMitzvahs and the role of Birkas Leninan. That's number one. I'm not sure the Netziv is saying that, but I think it's an important distinction. And the other point that he might be making is we do have a preference for Lishna Dekra. We do have a preference for Lishna Dekra. I think what we might be saying is we have a preference for Lishna Dekra if it sounds a little archaic, but it still works. Like, you know what it means. It sounds, it's a little, it has an old-fashioned sound to it. I know someone who a woman now in her 80s, who lived in Eretz Yisrael in the 40s, and they moved in 48 to America. So when she goes back periodically to Eretz Yisrael, she told me that people tell her, oh, your Hebrew is so old-fashioned. She speaks like the Hebrew of the 40s, before Hakamas HaMedina. So the language has evolved, and it sounds a little old-fashioned, right? You read, if you read Jonathan Swift, La'avdil, you read some novel, from an English novel from the 19th century, even the 18th century, so you understand more or less what's going on. It sounds a little bit archaic. You read the constitutions. It looks like there are too many words which are capitalized, right? Some of the spelling is a little off. It has an old-fashioned feel to it, but you can understand it. If Lahavdil, though, if you were to read Beowulf, almost 1,000 years ago, you don't get to Shakespeare, it's already difficult. Chaucer is really hard, 1300s. They go back almost 1,000 years to Beowulf. You have no clue what's going on. Now, the Hebrew language evolved much more gradually than the English language did for a variety of reasons, perhaps in part because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashkacha on the Hebrew language, and B'derech HaTeva, because there's been an unbroken chain of several thousand years of Jews learning the same Chumash and davening from the same Seder and learning the same Mishnayos. So Memela it has, and for a long chunk of time it wasn't a spoken language, so you understand well that the language changed more gradually, but there definitely were changes. So if I say eights, even though now the word is Elon, now in the days of the Mishnah, the word is Elon, but you still know what it means. It sounds a little old-fashioned, but you still understand it, as opposed to where it's like, I wouldn't even know what it means. So, for instance, that may be the difference, because that might be the reason why on Peiros HaElul we say Baruch Pri HaEitz, but when we put on Tefillin, we don't say Likshar Os or Likshar Totefes. This is not used at all. It's not at all colloquial Hebrew. So I think that might be, again, there are two possible distinctions that Tziv is making, two possible distinctions that one could make. Well, one could say, look, our sugya is talking about the Birkas HaNenin, and the Tziv's counterexamples are Birkas HaMitzvahs. I think the Netziv might be making the point that there's sort of like there's a tension between two opposite values here. In other words, we do want to have Kalishim Dekra, but it also has to be, a bracha has to be something that people who are saying the bracha will understand and appreciate. So if there's like a slight difference between Lashon B'nai Adam and Lashon Dekra, okay, so that we have a preference for Lashon Dekra. But once if it just sounds a little archaic, then you're still going to use Lashon Dekra. That's ideal. As I said, like, it's a little bit like Ke'en D'Oraisa. We want to even use the language of Tanakh. But if the divide between the language of Tanakh and the spoken Hebrew of the time of the Takan of the Bracha is already so vast, it's like unintelligible. It's like no one talks like that anymore. So then already, as much as we ideally prefer to have Lishon Dekra, but we have to give precedence. If you're triaging, the most important priority is that it should be understandable to the people who are saying it. As he said, Hirei ki be never b'chaloshem. So if you even Yotze b'di'eved, maybe l'chatchila, you say it in Yiddish or English or Portuguese, so certainly Mishnei Hebrew can't be that much of a problem. It's not ideal. It's not as ideal as Biblical Hebrew, but when the intelligibility is an issue, so we go with that. So that just sort of wraps up the discussion of yesterday. Yeah, question, yes.
This is the comment. I want to say something similar to what I was saying just now. It might not be exactly the same, but it could be that the reason why for things like Beridria, I hate Beridria, I don't know, like the reason why we still use Lashon Dekra, maybe it's because that's something, or maybe even the reason why everyone knows colloquially that Ha'etz is from the tree, like, is because that's a bracha that you say very, very often, because people make a bracha on like a fruit or
interesting.
On bread, like almost daily.
That's a good point.
Whereas something like Ha'parashas Chala, that could be the reason why some people say Ha'parashas Chala versus Ha'parashas Truma, like, could be because that's a bracha that you make as consistently.
Yeah, that's a good point. Ha'parashas Chala, well, you don't make it as consistently. And even other members of your family might not make it as consistently because we have access to commercially produced bread. And in an earlier era where people were bread was number one, a much bigger part of people's diet than it is nowadays, and bread was produced much closer to home. So if bread is being produced at home every day or a couple times a week, it would be a more common bracha. But I hear what you're saying. Lulav is definitely obviously only once a year. But on the other hand, that would push back Nitzilas Yadayim and Tefillin. So those hopefully are very, very common problems. Okay, what to think of? Shai, do you have any further questions?
No.
We're settled? Amazing. I want to talk a little bit about Yayin. Do you have a question?
Yeah.
Go for it.
In terms of brachos that are like the pasuk,
uh-huh.
It's perhaps the distinction between like brachos that are for the pasuk and brachos that are for mitzvahs are that When you eat something, you say a bracha on it, you're mottoing yourself to eat it from Hashem. So to use the language of the pasuk for Hashem makes sense. But when you do it for yourself, to say the thing that you don't understand, you're shaking your lulav, makes more sense.
Oh, so that's Avichai was saying something very similar during Seder that we had discussed during Elzman, two different approaches to understanding the Birkas HaMitzvah. The Birkas HaMitzvah, like according to Rambam, is like a Birkas Hananin, that's a matir,
right.
Or is it more for to help the way the Ritva had said in Psachim? It's more about my kavana. Right, so that's interesting. So you have to think about though. Does that line up? Maybe the Ritva is the one who's insisting on Lishon Dekra. So maybe that will be his solution. He's the one who's insisting on Lishon Dekra. We say the Ritva. What do you do with Alatil Zedayim? What do they do with Aliyach Tefillin? They'll say no. Maybe he would say I hold Lishitasi. Yeah. That Birkas HaMitzvahs are different. Birkas HaMitzvahs are self-directed, and therefore Lashon B'Yandam is more important. I think that's what you were saying earlier, right? Whereas,
no, more that it's so that when I do it, it's shown this is Lashem Shemayim.
Ah, okay. Good. And the Ritva is the one who differentiated between the role of Birkas HaNenin that we're going to get to in the Sugya and the role of Birkas HaMitzvahs. So for the Ritva, it's easier to say that there's a different preference in terms of the language of Birkas HaNenim, which he's talking about here, Lashon Dekra versus Birkas HaMitzvahs, which as we see is not always Tefillin, Lulav, and a Machlokas about the Chala. And maybe the Rambam is the one who says, who's not worried about Lashon Dekra, he's comfortable saying it for Shas Chala, which again accords with other Birkas HaMitzvahs. We don't know what he would say about Birkas HaNenim. Maybe he would give a different explanation for why we say Eitz HaNigel. It could be, definitely could be. Let's talk a little bit about, from the language back to the content of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah had said, getting back to the core of our Mishnah, Ketzim Avarchan Al Peiros, Shahakal Niyabidvar, we'll get to later, the Mishnah Daf Mem. But what do you say about Peiros? Peiros Ha'ilan, you say Bar Pireitz, except for Bar Pri Hagefen. Peiros Haaretz, you say Bar Pri Adama, except for Hamotzi Lachem. Hamotzi Lachem in Haaretz. So when we have the very first time the Mishnah has an exception, you say Bar Pri Eitz on Peiros Ha'ilan, except for Yayin, meaning, what should you have said on Yayin? You ought to have said Bar Pri Eitz, right? But you don't say Bar Pri Eitz, instead we make an exception, say Bar Pri Hagefen. The Ritva wants to know why. What's wrong with Bar Pri Eitz? Take a look at what he says. Do you have a Ritva? If not, you can. If not, not long, you can listen. Do you have a Ritva in front of you, or look on with a neighbor? It's Chutz Min Hayayin. The middle of Amud Reish Tazayin here. Chutz Min Hayayin. The Ritva says, on Yayin, you don't make a Bar Pri Eitz, you make a Bar Pri Hagefen. It changed for the better. That's a phrase that Gemara is going to have later when we talk about cooking fruits and vegetables, or maybe other ways of processing fruits and vegetables into some final dish. The Gemara develops the idea of ishtani. If something changes, it could change for the better or it could change for the worse. So Ritva says, look, when you take grapes and turn them into wine, it's clearly, if you're doing a good job in your as a vintner, it's ishtani li'iluya. That's a step up. That's a step up. You can tell just from the economics of it. It's worth spending time on winemaking.
Is that the same thing why we can tackle on fruit juice?
Okay, good. So sometimes you say if something changes, well, we'll get to that going forward. The Gemara says sometimes you have a change and it was a step down, so then you're going to drop your bracha. Here the Ritva says it was a step up. And just think about the economics of how much I don't know how many grapes it takes to make a bottle of wine, but the cost of a bottle of wine, of a nice bottle of wine, I don't mean something over the top, the cost of a decent bottle of wine is a lot more than the cost of that amount of grapes. Clearly, shani liluya, v'koveya bracha liatzmo, and it sets a bracha for itself. So it sounds like the Ritva said, number one, since winemaking is a significant improvement to the grapes, they change from fruit to this beverage, and in a very positive way. So therefore, it gets its own bracha. Uve gemara muchach the embirich al hayayin bar pir eitz yata. They says point number two. You should know, however, that although ideally you're supposed to make a bar pir hagefen for the reason I just explained, ishtani liluya, but if you did forget and you made a bar pir eitz, you are Yotze b'diavad, and he says that is the Gemara. So let's take these two statements of the Ritva one at a time. Let's just spend a couple of minutes just appreciating, be misboning, and appreciating what it is. There's a lot going on in these 2.5 lines. Now, number one, when he says, well, it was a shtani li'iluya, I told you that's the Gemara later. The koveya bracha la'atzmo. You might wonder, like, that's interesting, because usually when things are ishtani li'iluya, if I take an apple and I bake it, that might be an improvement in the apple. But I don't have a new bracha, it's just that I don't drop down to shahako, I stay with the bari pri ha'etz. It's interesting that by wine, it's not just we don't drop down to shahako, we actually step up from a mere Bar Pri Eitz, you actually upgrade to a Bar Pri Hagefen. That's interesting. Striking. Yeah.
It depends what you define an improvement. Like, for some people, changing grapes into wine is not an improvement.
Yeah, good point. So we're going to have to, very good. We will have to, as we get more into Ishtani Liluya, which then we'll get there, so we're going to have to explore more. That's a good question. How do you define, I took vegetables, I turned them into soup. Was that an upgrade or a downgrade? I baked an apple. So some people would say, that's an upgrade. Other people would say, I don't like baked apple, but I do like raw apples. So maybe that's a downgrade. So good. We'll have to get that right with grapes and wine also. There are people who appreciate a Merlot. There are people who have no interest in drinking wine, but they're glad to eat grapes. You're right. We're going to have to, we will have Mishnah going forward. We're not ready for that yet. That's a very, very, very important shaila, very, very practical shaila. How do you know, am I drop? When do I drop to shahakal, and when do I not? And am I looking at, like, it does depend on the person himself who made the food, person himself who ate the food? Does it depend on what most people think in this area? Great question. That's a very important detailed implementation that we're not yet ready for. We will Mirchem get to. It is interesting that we don't just say because Ishtani Li'ilui was a positive change, so it maintains the Bar Pre'et, which is usually what we would say. But here we say Ishtani Li'ilui, and therefore you step up. So the truth is, some of you might have seen the Gemara. The Gemara has another very similar phrase. When the Ritva says, well, Ishtani Li'iluya Vikoveya Bracha Li'atzmo, it sets its own bracha. Does that sound familiar to anyone? You may or may not have seen this Gemara. You may or may not have seen that Gemara. Koveya Bracha Li'atzmo. Rashi says, Mitoch Hashivuso, Kula Sochashiv, Kavu Lo Bracha Li'atzmo. They gave it its own bracha, and the same is true for bread. So that might be just saying, look, it's more than just, okay, it's Rashi sounds like saying it's super chashav. Wine and bread, those are you know, highlights. The Ritva, though, sounds like he's saying something a little different. Take a look for a moment at a Gemara on Mem Aleph Amidez, Mem Bez Amid Aleph. They asked Ben Zoma. We rarely hear about Ben Zoma. We associate Ben Zoma only with Mishnais and Kergavis. But Ben Zoma was Talmud Chacham in Halacha and Agadah. So here the Gemara, the Baal Mem Aleph and Beis quotes the Bnei Yeshiva asked the Ben Zoma. He's an early Tana. I think he was a contemporary. I think Gemara says he's a contemporary of Rabbi Kiva. Shalu as Ben Zoma. The Talmidim asked Ben Zoma. Mipnei Ma Amru Devar Ma Boa Machmas Asuda V'Soch Asuda. Why is it that when you have food in the middle of a meal, Einam Tu'un and Bracha Lo Lefneim V'Lo Lachareim? I washed. I had bread at the beginning of the meal, so why don't I make it? I made a hamotzi, my bread. Why don't I also make a shahakal on my chicken? And why don't I make a bar nefashas after my chicken? What happened to that? The things that fit into the meal, not dessert. Things that fit into the meal. Dvar haba machmas asude besoch asude. It's the middle of the meal. It's related to the meal. So why don't I make a bracha before or after? Amar lehem ben Zoma explained to them, hol pas potrasan. It's because the bracha on the bread covers it. The hamotzi covers bracha rishona. The birkas hamazon covers bracha achrona. That's a din that certainly we're familiar with, in part because Ben Zalman told us. But then they ask him another kasha. Ihachi yayin ami niftere. So why is it that if you have wine in the middle of a bread meal, you do make a bari priya gefen? When we usually have, if you make kiddush on Shabbos and Yontif, you make your bari priya gefen beforehand. But let's say you didn't make kiddush. It was some other context. You were at a suuda at which you did not make kiddush. And they bring you a glass of wine. So if you're going to have some wine or grape juice in the middle of a bread meal, you do make a bar priya gefen. Bar priya gefen. Why? Yayina, if the idea is that the bread covers it, so yayina mi niftere pas, the wine should also be pottered by the bread. So says the Gemara, shani yayin, here on the top of Membez and Ralph, the goreim bracha li'atzmo. Wine causes its own bracha. What does that mean? That sounds very circular. Why do you have to make a separate bracha on wine? Because wine causes its own bracha. Well, that was my question. Why do you have to make a separate bracha on wine? It's in the middle of the meal. The same way the steak and the vegetables and the potato souffle don't need their own bracha rishona because the bread covers the whole meal. So wine is part of the meal. I'm having a Merlot with my steak. So I'm not making a separate shahaka on the steak, but I am making a separate hagefen on the wine. Well, how does that work? So the answer is, well, because wine has its own bracha. Well, that sounds circular. That was my question. Why does wine have its own bracha? What's going on? Shiny yayin degorim bracha liatmo. So Rashi explains something fascinating. He says, the Gemara didn't mean it causes its own bracha now. That's what I want to know. Why does it need its own bracha now? He says, no. Rashi says it means it has its own bracha elsewhere. What does that mean? Top Rashi, Membez, Amun Aleph. The Goy, some of you may have seen this in the Maram Kamos. The Gorin Bracha Liatzma Bechama Mekamos Huba. It comes, Yain pops up in many contexts. Umivarchin Alav, and you make a bracha on it. Well, that's true for everything. You can have an apple in many contexts. You make a bar priates on the apple. Well, what's your point? If I'm on a hike and I'm munching on a bag of peanuts, I make a bar pri adama. So when you have wine elsewhere, no. Rashi explains. The alpha pish lo yitzrichin l'shtiyaso. Even though you didn't need to drink it. You need to drink it, but it popped up anyways, and I made bar pri agafen. In other words, when do I often make a bar pri agafen even though I'm not really interested in drinking wine? Exactly. Kosal bracha. That's I think many achrom understand this Rashi. And that's what the Gemara is saying, is the reason why wine has more status and wine isn't going to be covered by a hamotzi, bar pri agafen is a different type of a bracha. It's a special type of a bracha. It's not only that wine is chashuv, but that bar pri agafen has like sort of like two roles. It's a, one of the birkas hananin. It fits into the list of bar pri agafen, bar pri eitz, and bar pri adama. It's also the bracha and a kosher bracha. I'm not really interested in drinking wine, but under the chuppah I'm going to have wine because I want to make a birkas erez. Because I want to make a birkas nisuin. I'm going to have wine because I'm making. I'm not interested in drinking wine matzah Shabbos, but you're making avdalah, so you make the bracha al hakos. So memela, I'm going to make a bar pri agafen. So it has a more status. There's more to say about this. We will, in Ritzem, get back to this going forward. But it's an interesting Rashi that Gor Bracha Liatzmo means that Bor Pre Geffen is a unique type of bracha. It's not just the Birkas Hananin, it's also part of Kiddush. It's also part of Avdalah. It's the bracha on the Koshal Bracha. So that might be what the Ritva is saying here. That it's a Shtani Li'ilu, it's a step up. And Yayin has its own life elsewhere. It's not just something I drink because I'm thirsty. It's also sometimes I need it for the bracha. I need it for the bracha. So maybe that's why there's going to be, it's not just I'm going to make a bar praise. Not only will I not drop down to shahakal, I'm not even going to make a bar praise. Wine has its own status. Wine fits into other brachas uniquely. So wine's going to get its, even when you're stopped drinking wine just to drink wine, it's still going to get, not only won't drop down to shahakal, it won't maintain a ha'etz. Wine is going to have its own unique birkas anana. That may be what the Ritva is saying again, coming back to the first line here. It gets its own bar pri agefen because it's an upgrade. Ishtayin liluya v'koveya bracha le'atzmo. That may be an echo of the Gemara Membeis as gorim bracha le'atzmo. That's number one. Yeah.
Why should it matter that just because when you're using it for kosher bracha, then you make a special bracha? Why does that matter if I'm drinking it not for kosher bracha?
It's a good question. So let me just say the following. A quick show of hands. How many kosos of wine do we have at Leila Seder? Four. How many times do you say bar pri agefen? How many times do you say a bar pri agefen over the course of the Seder? How many times do you say bar pri agefen over the course of the Seder? Four. Anyone not say four? Twice. Machlokes Ashkenazim and Sfaradim. Do you say a bar pri agefen two times or four times? Well, what's that all about? You're Ashkenazi, you probably never even thought about it. Like, that's what you do. But on the other hand, which kosos do you say bar pri agefen on? Do you remember? The first one and the third one. Right? Why? Well, once you bench, you have to make a new bar pri agefen. So the third one has the bar pri agefen. And obviously the first one's bar pri agefen. But the second one at the end of Magid and the fourth kosos at the end of Halo, Sfaradim don't make a bar pri agefen. Why? Well, why should they? You already made a bar pri agefen. I made a bar pri agefen in Kiddush. If you're having a regular Shabbos Yontif Suda, if you have more wine during the Suda, you don't make another bar pri agefen. You already made a bar pri agefen. After benching, okay, benching cuts off your brachas. Now you have to start again with a fresh bar pri agefen. So, really, the Sfardi position is the simpler one to understand the fact. The Ashkenazi position is very difficult. Why are you making bar pri agefen on coast number two? Why are you making bar pri agefen on coast number four? It's not the Ashkenazi's fault. Don't blame contemporary Ashkenazim. This is the old machlokes that we've shown him. Okay, it just kicks the can down the road. What's the issue? So that may go back to this as well. The Ashkenazi position may be rooted in the assumption that even if I is taking this idea to the next level, even though from a regular Hilchas Brachas perspective, there's no reason to make another Bar Pri HaGefen. If it was an apple, I made Bar Pri Eitz and an apple, and I'm going to have another apple, no new Bar Pri Eitz. But it could be that Bar Pri HaGefen, whenever you make the Koshal Bracha, the Koshal saying a Bracha al Kos might demand not only say the Bracha, the Asher Galanu, you got to say also a Bar Pri HaGefen. That's part of saying a Bracha al Kos. Even though I don't need to say Bar Pri HaGefen. Let's imagine a guy had a drink of wine. And now it's time for Kiddush. So that's an interesting question. Do you say, well, I was ready, you'll say my Bar Pri HaGefen? So now just say, pick up another Kos and just say, Asher Ki Yisham Sasam, just say the Bracha of Kiddush? No. Saying Kiddush requires that you say Bar Pri HaGefen. So that may be, as I was saying before, it seems like the Bar Pri HaGefen is two roles. It's a Birkas HaMenin, but it's also a chelik of how you say Bracha Kos, is you say Bar Pri HaGefen. And the nail, then you have to take a drink. There's more to say about that. I will leave you with, we're going to then, Mirsam, tomorrow, we'll look into the second comment the Ritva makes, which is that if you made a Bar Pri Eitz, you're Yotzei B'Dieved, which should not be surprising, but in fact it is. So we'll pick up with Mirsam tomorrow.
What dictates what bracha something gets?